Han sido asesinados en lo que va desde el 28 de abril hasta la fecha en el marco de estas movilizaciones, asesinatos en presuntas manos de agentes de la policía. ¿Su nombre y la organización al que representa?
Hola, mi nombre es Sandra, yo estoy con un grupo de madres que se llama Madres contra la Impunidad. Somos un grupo de mamás que decidimos juntarnos para protestar contra el estado opresor en el que estamos, en el cual matan a nuestros hijos, los violan, los desaparecen y nadie dice nada, no pasa nada, ya estamos cansados de que en este país nadie haga nada. No podíamos quedarnos en casa viendo cómo todo lo que está pasando en nuestro país sin hacer nada. Entonces nos juntamos un grupo de mamás que algunas afortunadamente no hemos perdido un hijo, pero nos sumamos al dolor de muchas familias que lo han hecho por la violencia policial que está incentivando el presidente de nuestro país. Todos saben que el presidente de este país es un títere de otra persona que es un paramilitar, el cual usa las Fuerzas Armadas en beneficio de un partido político de este país. Entonces, la fuerza pública de este país no tiene una ideología, supuestamente es Dios y patria, pero no lo está haciendo, está matando a su pueblo por órdenes de los superiores. También hacemos un llamado a esas personas, son personas del pueblo. Si tú eres un policía, si tú eres un militar, tú tienes que defender tu pueblo, tienes la conciencia, ¿por qué tienes que dispararle a tu gente? No estamos en desacuerdo total de la ideología que tiene las fuerzas militares de este país y de cómo el presidente está manejando toda esta situación. Eso no se hace.
Muchas gracias a usted por su participación en Telesur.
El gobierno colombiano impidió el martes la entrada al país del activista argentino Juan Grabois, que formaba parte de un grupo internacional que observaría la situación de derechos humanos en el marco del paro. Informa Paola Pérez de Telesur.
Y el miembro de la Misión Internacional de Solidaridad y Observación de Derechos Humanos, Juan Grabois, señaló que lo sucedido en Colombia luego de la prohibición de la entrada al país es una interpretación política del gobierno de Iván Duque.
Definición política del gobierno colombiano de impedir mi ingreso a su país, fundada administrativamente en la causal 15 del decreto reglamentario, que implica que quien les habla, bueno, sería un riesgo para la seguridad de Estado de Colombia, lo cual, por supuesto, no es cierto. Nuestra tarea sigue vigente.
Por último, Juan Grabois ha instado a miembros de la delegación internacional en Colombia a visibilizar la situación, ya que han recibido testimonios de situaciones bastante graves.
Lo más importante es que le demos visibilidad a esa delegación, porque interpretamos lo que sucedió como un intento de quitarle visibilidad a la tarea de la delegación. Así que bueno, les agradezco a todos su preocupación, en particular a la Cancillería Argentina, que se ha pronunciado con claridad. Le agradezco también a los compañeros y compañeras, los dirigentes sociales, políticos de Colombia, al ex secretario general de UNASUR, Samper, seguimos adelante. Por favor, sigan, hermanos, compañeros, periodistas, sigan el trabajo de la delegación argentina en Colombia, que está recibiendo tremendos testimonios y situaciones muy graves que tienen que ser visibilizadas internacionalmente.
En este contexto, la Misión Internacional de Solidaridad y Derechos Humanos, mediante una rueda de prensa, anunció que tras este incidente de deportación, de expulsión y no permitirle el ingreso a uno de sus integrantes, ellos van a continuar con sus labores y darán a conocer lo que han considerado posibles crímenes de Estado durante las represiones brutales que mantiene la policía en el gobierno de Iván Duque.
Nosotros nos concentramos fundamentalmente en que, bueno, somos 20 argentinos, argentinas, que vamos a continuar con esta tarea. Por supuesto, en la República Argentina esto se ha convertido en un escándalo nacional, porque nunca nos hubiéramos imaginado que una misión de derechos humanos se la envíe de vuelta al país para evitar que se conozca a nivel internacional crímenes que consideramos son crímenes de Estado.
Y así llegamos al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Informativo Pacífica.
A continuación, Informativo Pacífica.
¡No te la pierdas! Because we are the 99%.
Histórico fallo de Tribunal de La Haya ordena a la corporación Shell reducir sus emisiones de dióxido de carbono en 45%. Ante los asesinatos de candidatos a puestos de elección popular, el presidente Andrés Manuel López Obrador pide a los mexicanos no dejarse atemorizar y salir a votar. Y expulsan de Colombia activista argentino que formaba parte de una delegación de observación de derechos humanos en el marco del paro nacional. A continuación, detalles de estas y otras noticias en la edición de hoy del Informativo Pacífica. Les saluda Norma Martínez. Acompáñenos. El Tribunal de La Haya ordenó a la corporación petrolera holandesa Shell reducir sus emisiones de dióxido de carbono en 45% a finales del 2030 en un histórico fallo emitido el miércoles. El fallo fue resultado de una demanda presentada en 2019 por organizaciones de defensa del medio ambiente como Milieu Defensie, la filial holandesa de la organización internacional Amigos de la Tierra, Greenpeace y Action Aid en Holanda. Asimismo, 17.000 holandeses se unieron a la demanda como parte civil que acusó a Shell de no hacer lo suficiente para alinearse con el Acuerdo de París de luchar contra el cambio climático y denunciaron la destrucción del clima por parte de Shell. Esta es la primera vez que un tribunal dictamina que una empresa necesita reducir sus emisiones de acuerdo con los objetivos climáticos globales, según Friends of the
This is how it started. It's not hard to understand. From coast to coast, they're lying at a CEO's command. From nationalist public radio, CNN and NBC, Big Brother spewing propaganda from the disinformation ministry. They say the economy is booming. We hear the homeless beggars cry. They say we help poor countries. We see bombs falling from the skies. Reality doesn't exist, they're trying to say. But some of us decided there is another way. Seize the airwaves, seize the time. 'Cause lying to the people is the real crime. When it's all owned by corporations and theirs is the only word, we will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be.
And rumbling your way next on the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz, we can get through the static. It's, oh boy. Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the Thursday evening, May 27th edition. Going to have some a bouncy bounce through the benchlands again with a number of interviews. And then we're going to huddle with the Huffsters. That should be interesting. We had a Huff meeting today, and it was small, and well, you're going to be subjected to it probably on this particular occasion, as well as me running through a few other things, too, if I can figure out what to do next. So, stay with us.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with an audio update here. Actually, this is the audio track of a video from Robbie Powelson, who's the Marin County Homeless Advocates, or Homeless Union, I'm not sure which, guy up in Sausalito, who you probably heard from if you've been following this show some weeks back, where the some of the port authorities not liking the unsightly so-called anchor outs, poor people who live on their boats, had those people, some of their boats destroyed, people moved to a park and then evicted from the park, and in moved the Union of the Homeless, including my old frenemy Anthony Prince, who put together an injunction to stop that removal of people from the park, and good for him for doing so. And I guess they're still at liberty there, though I'm going to have to do an update by, I'm going to try a quick phone call to Robbie, but here's his latest, I think it's 4 or 5 days old, and I'm not quite sure where this comes from. It's a Facebook posting, but, here it is. You be the judge.
Hey, what's up? It looked like my audio in the last video didn't work out, so I'm just reshooting this real quick. I just wanted to say that we need to be getting ready for June 15th when Governor Newsom is going to be rolling back a lot of the protections from COVID-19. I'm telling you, I think that what we're already seeing and talking with people just across the state through the California Homeless Union and other organizations, all the governments are getting ready to go back to business as usual after the pandemic. They want to re-up the sweeps. They want to have more aggressive enforcement on Richardson Bay. They're pretty clear about this. I mean, it's not this last year, there's been a lot of work done to expose the mistreatment of people who are unhoused or differently housed, and how criminalization is occurring. But I'm telling you, they're coming right back. And I personally, today we just did the voter registration. We were doing the voter registration drive, and the police came in, took our voter registration forms, took my tent. And that's the kind of stuff that they'll be ready to do. I'm telling, June 15th, there's going to be a statewide action to challenge business as usual, challenge Governor Newsom and what he's tried to do to try and sweep people back under the rug. And also, I'm telling people, and anybody who's interested, I'm ready to hit the road because we need to get really... We need to get on the offense because if we're trying to protect what we've held on to, I think that's they'll just chip away. But if we come at it in a bolder fashion, taking up more space, asserting our rights, and I think especially our First Amendment rights, and using voter registration as a powerful assertion of our rights, because I was just talking with the elections department today. You can register to vote every time you move to a new voting jurisdiction legally. According to Dan Miller from the elections department, you can change voter registration every time you move and you camp out in a different town. You have a right. You're a citizen of that community. You can register to vote in that community, and every person has rights. Obviously voting has been highly problematic because we're not represented by our local government at all. Our local government right here in Sausalito, for example, has put, in the words of Judge Chen, put people in danger working against public health. So I think voter registration is really going to be key, and I think doing voter registration in a way that's bold, that where we set up shop, and we organize, we educate people about their rights, we register people to vote, and then the cities are, because the cities are running scared from anybody living in a tent, anybody living in an RV, they're really scared. They're actually they don't act well, and they're going to respond in a way that reveals their fear and reveals how ill-equipped and how unjust it is. So I'm encouraging everybody come out to these voter registration events we'll be doing probably tomorrow. I don't want to give away too much because I know the police are watching my social media. As we keep on seeing the Public Records Act requests of Curtis Hovel and Sausalito PD taking screenshots of my social media, so I know they're watching. But let's do voter registration, y'all, and come on out, and let's start taking up more space. Pandemic is coming back. They want to sweep people back in the corner. No. Now that they take up more space, be more visible, be more verbose, because all this oppression we're seeing is just smoke and mirrors, man. If we push back firmly, it's going to fall back. So thank you, and stay in touch, y'all.
And that was Robbie Powelson of Sausalito. And I'm hoping to give him a call on the phone shortly, but I've always been kind of a skeptic of the voting approach since homeless are such a small minority of the population. But, you know, a century ago, the IWW folks moved from town to town, well, it was a little bit more than a century ago, 110 years ago, doing free speech fights, organizing workers on street corners and filling up the jails. They weren't into voting much either. But it's possible if you can conceive of an alliance between voters, students, elderly, disabled, and tenants from one town after another, and actually having some universal demands that you bring from town to town and you apply them to the cruel and repressive ordinances that are either on the books or threatened, or not on the books but actual police policies in town after town, you could actually mobilize people who share those ideals. So I think it's not such a bad idea. I mean, you've probably heard me in skeptical conversation, if you're a regular listener to the show, with Wes White, the Salinas homeless union guy, who puts a lot of stock in conversations with and pressure on Santa Cruz, or I should say Salinas city council members and Salinas board of supervisors people. But he also does a lot of organizing and videoing and documenting and confronting of power structures in different places, which is a great thing. And I'm not too optimistic about his hope for, oh, I don't know, positive assertions from council members and supervisors. But I would think that mobilizing people around programs that are strong. For example, the California Union of the Homeless has a strong platform. So, for instance, the Santa Cruz Union chapter of the California Union back in 2019 issued this at the time that they created Camp Phoenix, a short-lived five-day homeless-run encampment out at the Ross Camp area behind Ross Dress for Less in the Gateway Shopping Center in Santa Cruz, which lasted only as long as until the police illegally and unconstitutionally moved in to destroy it without giving people real alternatives to go to elsewhere, as they had similarly destroyed 8 or 9 months before the Ross Camp and encampment with hundreds of people there. The different principles that were asserted were good ones by the Union of the Homeless. Moratorium on enforcement of all laws designed to have the effect of criminalizing the homeless, including the issuing of citations for being in a park after dark, trespass on public property, and the blocking of sidewalks. I was one of the people who suggested that. Dismissal of all pending charges against persons who were forced to break these laws in order to survive. 2, immediate opening of the Civic Auditorium. We're talking about Santa Cruz. We're still looking for that to happen, just for such a thing as a decent city council meeting, but they won't even do it for a city council meeting, much less for sheltering the homeless. Immediate opening of the Civic Auditorium and other public buildings vacant at night as emergency shelter for elderly, disabled, and vulnerable folks this winter. Public disclosure of all vacant city-owned, city-controlled, and tax-delinquent properties and their designations as available. Emergency housing for the homeless. Moratorium on eviction of low-income renters facing homelessness. 3, full compliance with the legal requirements of Martin versus Boise, the decision by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that prohibits enactment and enforcement of laws targeting the homeless where no alternative indoor shelter has been provided, acknowledge the legitimacy of homes on wheels parking in industrial zones, add sanitary facilities and trash pickups. 4, fully restore rights to those at, and this is the area that was a kind of a gravelly barbed wire enclosed encampment of only 60 tents at the time, which is now vacant. Restore fully rights to those there at that encampment at 1220 River Street. Provide showers, drinking water, free access for those who make 1220 River their home, and respect the civil rights of all who live at the city-run camp. Terminate the contract with the Salvation Army and recognize the rights and abilities of 1220 River Street residents to manage the camp themselves. Now, I want to point out that there has been an improvement mainly because of the injunction prompted by direct action by the community here and a variety of organizations, but also spearheaded legally by the Union of the Homeless, who moved to get the first a temporary restraining order and then an injunction in first in December and then in January for the San Lorenzo campground. And in that campground, which has now been moved down into the benchlands and is threatened, I think, with dispersal at the end of June for the same reasons that Robbie Paulson was talking about earlier in that segment that you heard. The people are coming out of the COVID, so the authorities no longer have to respect that as a reason to lay off homeless encampments and let people shelter in place. But the improvement between 1220 River Street and the Benchlands is remarkable. First of all, in the expansion of facilities, there are, well, first of all, it's kind of an open-ended campground. I mean, I am not aware of people who have been refused access to the campground when they just showed up with a tent. Although I haven't talked to everyone there, I have not heard yet of a case of a person who's been turned away. It may be they still have to get a particular spot and a particular plot, but it's also possible, I'm wondering if it isn't also possible to move into places with people who are already there as a second person in a tent or some such thing, which may, of course, involve having a good on a relationship with that person you're trying to move in with. Also, there are electrical hookups, at least for phones, that are there, although I believe the hookups were used for electricity, and that was a little too much for the authorities, so they cut them off for a while, and they cut them off at night, and it's now more monitored, but still also, it's not entirely autonomously run in the Benchlands, but it's a lot more so than I had thought it would be based upon the wording of the code of conduct that Anthony Prince agreed to and the Union of the Homeless agreed to, and the judge Susan Van Coolen accepted, that was presented by City Attorney Tony Condotti, which sounded pretty bad. It sounded like people would be fenced in, that people would not be visitors, would be treated with suspicion, that people could be evicted relatively easily without much cause, that there would be no real protection for the legal rights of the people there if they were unfairly evicted. But I haven't heard of a lot of that happening, and it does look largely to be homeless run with relatively minor police involvement. A couple times a day was what at least one person told me on a recent set of interviews. You'll be hearing some of that shortly. So that's a positive thing and a step forward. The fifth thing that the Union of the Homeless, fifth demand that they made here in Santa Cruz a couple years ago, was end the seizure of homeless persons' personal survival property. And this has become a part of almost every injunction that I've heard about in different cities, whether it's Chico or Santa Cruz. I don't know about Sausalito or Sacramento. I don't know about Marysville, although the people have recovered some financial remuneration for some of the property they've lost up there in Marysville. But it's a demand. It's appropriate. Authorize private entities is the sixth demand to sponsor portable toilets, provide 24-hour access to public bathrooms at the Soquel and Locust Street garages. I don't know if that's been done. And restore full access to Loudon Nelson bathrooms. That has not been done, with a code if necessary, meaning monitoring of a certain kind. Unnecessary in my view, but is certainly better than simply straight exclusion of people. 7, demand that the city publicly denounce vigilante violence and harassment against those who cannot afford housing and publicly oppose and investigate all online solicitations for violence against the homeless, not where this has been done at all. And it hasn't been a big cause célèbre of mine, but it has been for a number of members of the homeless union who have suffered physical assaults. I'm talking about Alicia Kuhl and the group of people she's been living with. And designate October 27th the Zero Quintero Day in the city of Santa Cruz, and that, of course, was not done, in spite of all the other frilly, fluffy, special days that were designated by the city council every 2 weeks. And that was part of a statement signed by Anthony Prince, and a good statement it was, the death of Desiree Quintero and the creation of Camp Phoenix, the statement of the California Homeless Union, the Desiree Quintero Memorial Camp. Desiree Quintero was the woman who died when a tree fell on her after she and others had been dispersed forcibly by police bullying and threats and citations from the earlier Ross Camp. So let's see if we can get a hold of Robbie Paulson up in Sausalito. But sounds like we aren't making it there. Maybe in a little later time. So let's jump, since we can't get a hold of Robbie, to the Salinas scene. I got a video sent to me a day or two ago by activist Becky Johnson in Seaside, or Beggarbacker Becky, as I call her to her annoyance, but it's said fondly. She's been a longtime supporter of homeless civil rights and has written about the need to understand why people panhandle and why it's important that they be supported and that they be their rights be acknowledged in that regard. This was a this was a video which I have the audio of. I don't know if I'm going to play all of it because it's not the highest quality, but it's easier if you watch it. You can actually see the people talking. And I maybe, if you subscribe to the Huff email, just get in touch with me at rnorse3@hotmail.com and you can get on the Huff email list. I can send you, I do these, whenever I do this show, I do a preliminary description of the show and send it out in advance. You can get a copy of that. If you get on my email at rnorse3@hotmail.com. Anyway, this is a couple of folks, Melinda, Jerry, and Sick, share some of their thoughts, homes, and experiences and what it's like in their homes for the future, or hopes for the future, while living among one of the city's larger and loving tent communities. COVID-19 restrictions are due to be lifted in less than a month. I think this is Wes writing, but I'm not sure. Leaving this already precarious community with more questions about their futures than answers. Most every jurisdiction across the state will go back to business as usual, which means the sweeps will continue at full pace. Help those who are unhoused in your community from suffering unnecessary losses through public money. Speak out to hashtag stop the sweeps in your city or county. A couple of other groups, hashtag homeless not helpless, hashtag no more deaths on the streets, hashtag connect people with services, hashtag fight poverty, not the poor, hashtag where do we go, which is a Berkeley encampment, hashtag Salinas Homeless Union, hashtag California Homeless Union, hashtag National Union of the Homeless, hashtag Poor People's Campaign. I'm getting a little more iffy here as far as I'm concerned, but onward. Hashtag a National California for Moral Revival. Hashtag B-Team, why not just Team Win? Not sure what that means. And hashtag Make Caring Profitable Again. And hashtag We Can Do So Much Better. This is a bunch of interviews out at the Sherwood Park Rodeo Grounds, or Rodeo Grounds, not sure how they pronounce it out there, in Salinas from May 19th. But before we hear any of that, let's see if we can actually hear some straight talk from Wes White. So it looks like we're in luck. I have on the line with me activist Wes White in Salinas. Hello, Wes.
Hey, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm good. Glad I got a hold of you. So you interviewed these three folks, Melinda, Jerry, and Sick, about a week ago, right? And this was at a park in which how many folks were resident?
Probably between 60 or 70.
And how long had they been there?
Well, it's proliferated as they've driven other people out. How long have they been there? Well, the ones that you saw, they've been there for a couple of years at least.
Uh-huh. And by they driven people out, you mean the authorities?
The city, yes.
And when was the last time the city pulled that kind of stuff?
The end of September.
So people have been left alone largely there since the end of September?
Correct.
Have they been provided trash pickups, sanitary facilities, porta potties that actually are clean?
It's a city park, and so there are trash cans that are maintained. The city drives through there. There's a bathroom facility, three stalls on both sides. That's open during the day. There were two porta potties for 60, 70, 80 people. It fluctuates. And now there's only one. That one, when I inspected the last time, was actually very well kept. You know, it had a lot of toilet paper in it and very clean, honestly clean.
Mm-hmm.
Although the hand wash pump, I didn't never check. I don't even think there is one, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
It's inside, that's why.
Mm-hmm.
I videoed a short little thing of that, but I figured, well, it's not going to make the same impact, so I didn't include the bathroom.
What was the health situation in the camp regarding A, COVID, and B, other illnesses in the last 6 months that you've been aware of?
People did come down with COVID over the summer, and a few people got raspy sick, you know, for a couple weeks. Nobody was put on a ventilator. But, it took them a while to recover, I guess.
Many deaths this year, or I should say in the last year, 2020, in Salinas, from home outside?
Yes, many. Too numerous. I don't even know about them all.
Any estimates? Oh, can you hold for a minute? I think we've got an incoming call. Let's see if we can... don't go away. So I think we're back again. Any sort of ballpark figure? Is there a sort of a general homeless count every year about the number of deaths, or is that swept under the rug, pretty much, or not done?
It depends. I mean, it's not a collective, centralized focus every year. They haven't been. I don't know if they really focused on the deaths this last year, not that I'm aware of. We just did a memorial community meeting last week at Sanborn, an industrial, a different place, because they just recently experienced three deaths, and at the same time there were two that passed in Chinatown this last week. So, you know, and that's been impacting, and, you know, and that's real recent. Just in the last couple months, there's been a half a dozen people.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just played a little audio from Robbie Powelson up in Sausalito. You may have seen his video. It was, I don't know if you've seen it or not, but he talks about how he's thinking of going on the move and aggressively pushing for homeless people to register at different addresses as they move into different cities. I think Robert Aguirre talked about this too. You may have also spoken about it.
Yes.
Well, just as sort of a flying squad of I don't know if he was thinking of this particularly, but maybe he's just giving it as a general advice to homeless folks to not just try to influence a particular city, but wherever you go, maybe use this as a basis. My thought was to use it as a basis for organizing, let's say, the way Wobblies organized about 110 years ago, going from city to city, having street rallies, getting people to join up around a sort of common objectives that don't just impact the homeless, that impact tenants, disabled, elderly, and so forth. Always a nice idea and rarely something that could ever be materialized. I know you tried to organize voters among homeless folks with the Union of the Homeless a couple of times, and you have been focusing a lot on we've talked a lot about the value of good relations with and better ideas from the Salinas City Council and the Salinas Board of Supervisors. What do you think of Robbie's idea, or let's, I should say, Robbie and Robert's idea, too, because it's, I mean, I at least I'm talking about it. I don't know if I'd be doing it, but...
I like it. You know, I mean, that's actually the way to fly, because you, that's the one thing you're not given is an address. You know, people give you food, people give you clothes, but a place to stay, you know, a consistency in your life. And you have to be, you're a resident of the city to begin with. You ought to be able to take your space and, you know, wherever that is. And that, even in the voting thing, it says, you know, that you still, if you're a citizen, you're allowed to vote. So you're supposed to be counted. You know, it doesn't matter where you live. You can just put description where you're at, and of course a lot of people consider that, you know, targeting themselves, but it don't matter, because I mean, as soon as they see the tent, they're going to come after you anyway. So, you know, you may as well try to gain some legitimacy. We live in a paper society, and everything tries to kill you on paper.
How is
this one weak superpower, but it is a superpower.
How is the Union of the Homeless, or whatever organizations that you're working with, and you're not just working with that one organization, doing in Salinas as far as mobilizing what I consider to be the real force that backs up injunctive threat, which I think is a good thing, and it's been successful in a number of cities, at least up till now. But it's often based upon people showing up directly, as the Homeless Union and a variety of other groups have shown up to resist harassment by the police when it's happening. I don't know if that's happened so much. Well, it did happen. It's happened in Chinatown in Salinas, and it held folks off for a day, and then Chinatown got swept. But in other areas, it's been more successful. And more recently, in Sausalito and in Santa Cruz, when it happens, I've been a little kind of gloomy about the prospects locally, at least here in Santa Cruz, because I haven't seen people getting together to do it, even though the June 29th court date looms for us here, so that when the bench lands is going to be due to be released from the protection of the federal court. What do you see happening around the real organizational power of groups of people who are willing to put their bodies or at least a lot of their energies out to resist inappropriate police sweeps, no matter what the legal fictions they're using?
Well, it just needs to stop, you know. I mean, like you said, that direct action, getting the word out, I guess, is one thing. You know, of course, you have to have some kind of outlet, so power, you know, a Facebook account like Robbie Scott, Monica Martella is one of those. You know, I mean, just even writing a statement and trying to be vigilant about, you know,
What I'm asking, Wes, I guess, is how that's going. In Salinas, are you at a stronger point, a weaker point, somewhere in the middle that you were at?
We're pretty poised. I mean, we have the political will has already been stated out loud. The Share Center, you know, was 50-50 between the city and the county, so they had a joint meeting to solidify that contract. And during that, you know, they overwhelmingly supported having sanctioned encampments and RV parks.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so, they're not going to do sweeps around here.
So are you suggesting, though, that sanctioned encampments and RV parks by the city is one thing, if you can find a place to put them? Are they going to leave alone existing encampments?
Yes, that is very much the point.
And you know this because how?
Because of the attitude, I guess, you know, the feeling. And no, it's not in writing. But it's overwhelming. I mean, you know, how can the administration go against what the city council will vote against them for?
By administration, you mean what?
The management, public works, you know, Smith and Enright, the contractors. They dare not cross a line in the sand. Not at this point.
Well, you're
I don't think they'll do it after the 15th either.
So
your jurisdictions, other cities in Monterey County, I can see that happening.
Maybe I should ask you about those too, but I guess.
Seaside really easy.
Okay, I want to hear about that, but I'm wondering about the Sherwood Park situation. Is, you think, a stable one? They're not under any danger of a sweep there.
So the rodeo happens in October, and they had an initial, you know, alarm bell of by the end of June. That's been set back, as far as I understand, until closer to the rodeo. Now that gives them a time window to figure out what else to do. Now, I was just slamming Seaside right now because they're going to drive out the Roberts Lake RV refugees. And, you know, today I got called and I went down there, the city of Seaside and the county of Monterey and CSU and BCHA were all there trying to connect people to services, get them housing, whatever, you know. So that's actually the beauty of it. Now, but see, first they went and said, you guys got to go. And there needs to be a place for these folks to go to if they're going to have to leave that spot. And that's been being made pretty clear to them, even though they put out an article, you know, just talking about how wonderful they are for kicking people out. That's why they got city and county there now.
So how many people
they know they need to follow through.
How many people are being displaced down there?
About 30 people. When they got RVs, you know, not all of them run, but, you know, that's better than a tent.
Mm-hmm. Now, what did you discover when you went down there? Are people going to relocate as a community, or are they simply fleeing in all directions?
I think people are being connected, not necessarily fleeing, but being serviced. And I don't know, you know, I mean, that's what they're really trying to do is get some connected so then there's less of a pool to deal with. You can get a smaller lot, you know, it's easier to deal with through the smaller numbers. So if they can connect people, they're going to. There's, you know, 208 extra vouchers now.
Connect with what? I'm sorry.
Connect with housing, permanent supportive housing, being able to go into, you know, your own place, lock a door that locks.
But I thought I heard you suggest that you were skeptical about that as a real prospect. Am I wrong about that?
It's both. I don't, you know, I mean, people have to qualify, but you know, they're making it a little easier for people to qualify. And like I said, I mean, they got all these extra vouchers now, and they're starting to get a database of landlords interested. You know, it's one of those pendulum swings thing. You know, everybody's been such a jerk in the past that you know, the others are going, oh, that's not right. Stepping up instead.
So what about getting back to Salinas? Has Chinatown been secure throughout the COVID, and is it still secure?
Chinatown has had a round of COVID as well, just about the same summer, because, you know, people move around. And I haven't really heard too much, you know, it's not really a place that I frequent very often anymore because Dred's not down there for lunch.
Mm-hmm. Here you
are. Seriously, that'd be one of the things. So go pick him up and check in with people.
Dred, for those who don't know, was your cameraman and your friend. But I mean, I guess what I'm wondering is, have there been any sweeps in the last year in Chinatown?
So the thing closed down in March. They wanted to clear everybody off the train tracks. That didn't happen. They started kicking everybody off the private properties, and then they kicked everybody off the train tracks, and then they did Sherwood Park, and the train tracks was an awful lot of people, and part of that was Chinatown, you know, because they're on the tracks. It's one of the edges. So that's as hard as they hit Chinatown, I think. Maybe they hit them once.
And so you think this is less likely to happen now, because your sense of feeling, or I guess I have to ask you this again. I know this is not making
political will is there. That's the only thing they're scared about is contradicting what the electeds want to do.
I don't really have much confidence in electeds, as you know, but I have confidence in the groups of people who are willing to embarrass the electeds and oppose the electeds with their bodies, their organizing, and their community power. Is that force, you think, still in operation?
I think it's getting stronger, absolutely. I mean, we just had a George Floyd memorial yesterday and a community burial.
and the same people who were here a year ago are still going strong. Quite a few of those folks are also, you know, now part of the homeless union, and have been completely supportive and totally energized. You know, they've been a presence. You know, I mean, they were part of the RV refugees there in Roberts Lake, you know, blocking and forcing a special council meeting to change their mind and decide to put people somewhere. You know, it's
tell me about that meeting. Tell me about that meeting, Wes, that happened. You mentioned about Roberts Lake that made changes in their policy.
Back in like, I don't know, June, July, somewhere. The city of Seaside had voted to get rid of everybody at Roberts Lake, and so everybody was getting noticed. There was about 2 dozen people the first day that mobbed the police while they were there. You know, even the assistant chief came down, not the chief.
Let me interrupt you again. I mean, more recently, is anything? I guess what I'm looking for is, I mean, there's a big, you know, there's a rah rah rah.
On the last Seaside Council meeting, they voted to summarily dismiss everybody off of their new property without redirecting them anywhere else. Jason Campbell was the only one to go, "Are you sure this doesn't seem reasonable? I don't think that's what we should be doing." And he could not get a second. So
you aren't up. It sounds like you're rather pessimistic about Seaside.
That's why I say Seaside's the easy mark. But then again, you know, I mean, they just repented, you know, because they know they can't do this. So this, you know, at least they're going to try to make it look like they did all they could, you know. But that's the thing: if they do all they can, then they have to wait until everybody's gone before they can even get started.
Well, is that real? I mean, I'm familiar that there are always these cosmetic moves that cover this for the media. That's not, to me, that's nothing particular.
Oh, no, there was no media involved. Actually, I guess the Weekly was there. Maybe it's just only a show. But I think what happened was, you know, when that article came out, because the manager, city manager, and one of the other council members, not Jason Campbell, you know, they both said, you know, we're doing just fine, no problem, don't worry about it, they just got to go. And I think the Weekly was like, "Are you sure that's the way you want to leave it?" And I think they heard that. I don't know.
The way you could tell is if actual people got into actual housing. Do you have any stats on that?
At the moment, no, I do not. You'd have to ask the Coalition on the Service Providers, probably, and they would have a conglomerate information of everybody.
Well, if you happen to get any of that information as you plod through the world, let me know, because that's, to me, where the rubber meets the road. I couldn't care less what the media says or what optimistic council members say or whatever the fuck they say. You know the story. So, you know,
there's only been one council member in the Seaside that has actually tried to stick up for people, and that's Jason Campbell.
And my issue for you is, how many people are going to show up if they do pull a sweep in Salinas? What's going to happen if that happens? How many people do you think are ready to go there and block a sweep?
For Carr Lake, there was a dozen people plus, and I think that would exponentiate. So, you know, probably 50, maybe not an exponential.
Carr Lake, but, again, remind me, Carr Lake is what, April or March?
November.
Oh, okay. And there have been no sweeps since November.
Correct. No way, dude. That's when things really started slamming right there, you know. They watched the thing at Sherwood Park happen. And then they were like, "Oh no, not on my watch." And then that was the Carr Lake one.
See, I guess I think did the Carr Lake sweep get stopped, or did it just get opposed?
It got opposed. It got documented and embarrassed the hell out of the city to where they. And then of course one of the council members was like, "I thought you guys weren't even doing sweeps." Mm-hmm. And that's the lady who also has a mother who lives in an RV, so she's the one who's very enthusiastically in support of RV parks in Salinas.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. I mean, I'm glad to hear that there have been no new sweeps. I'm glad to hear that you are persuaded that if there was another sweep, it would be effectively at least contested, if not opposed, by the same groups that have been active in the past. I'm always, when I hear about these large sort of politically accepted conservative, I call them conservative, rallies for George Floyd a year later, whoopee-doopee, while everybody else is getting shot down in the back, in the head, et cetera, et cetera. And there's
haven't seen Salinas' one yet. Go ahead.
What's that?
So you haven't seen Salinas yet. You know, they ain't a bunch of fucking white fools, man. They're trying. They really are trying.
And what's the situation about the average person being treated by the average police officer who's on the beat? What's your feeling? That's improved, you think?
No. That's why there's a bunch of people,
No, I see. I misunderstood.
Yeah. When we were at City Hall on Tuesday, okay, the fund, the police crowd was there, the Blue Lives Matter folks were there, and then we showed up, and I mean, it was very clear juxtaposition that one's motivation is fueled by fear and hate, and another motivation is our motivation is more about love and peace.
Who got the money? Who got the money?
I do not know.
Okay.
I don't think there. I think today was a study session, not a voting session. But I can't be certain. I didn't stick it out until the end.
Do you have a sense that people are willing to take direct action the way they are in some other more radical cities like Portland, Seattle, Minneapolis, and places in, you know, that where there have been actual killings? I don't know what the story is. Have there been killings in Salinas recently or not?
Oh, yes. Well, not as recent. I mean, 2019 is the most recent. In 2014, there were like five. And so all the officer-related deaths, murders, cleared, of course. Mm-hmm. Those weigh heavy on people. And I guess we have like reinvest 831. I mean, they are still pushing paper more or less.
Is there a Salinas cop watch?
There's a few that are, yes. They're just part time and like me, but they're avid videographers and Frank Evans and I can't think of his first name, but it's Stillwell, I'm pretty sure. Those two guys were there too, and videoing, and you know, just trying to be objective more than anything. And they constantly, exercise their rights in front of the police. So it's kind of cool. And then Anthony X is another guy.
Hmm. If you can, if you feel like it at some point, put those names into an email for me. I'd like to be able to get in touch with those folks if I ever get around to it. So, Wes, is there stuff that I haven't covered that you think should be mentioned before I go?
That sanctioned encampment thing, the whole reason why they're driving a thrust toward it is because if they do get rid of people out of Shore Park, where do they put them? And that's kind of the whole concept. So they are looking at allowing, the Ross camp, the Phoenix camp, to actually happen.
But there are no concrete plans to do that at the moment.
No, they don't. I mean, it's interesting the way people operate, and unless it's the front burner, they don't really worry about it until it is the front burner.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
No, I mean, seriously, Salinas seems like it's going in a better direction. Like maybe not every jurisdiction in Minor County, and certainly not in Central Coast. But they're doing it. I mean, we need to state the continuum of care. Monterey and San Bernardino counties also lead the state. So I do feel like things are starting to flow differently. The attitude, the political will, it's still a little conflicted, but it's still driving. And here we are with another $12 billion. So we got a hungry hippo of that money. And since Monterey County is kind of leading the state, they're going to do aggressive, innovative things and try to get everybody that can off the street. And if we can do it, then so can any other jurisdiction, Santa Cruz.
And for folks who want more information to follow your latest adventures, where should they go?
John Doe 13K, two words, and then on YouTube. And Monterey County Homeless Advocates on Facebook, and Agents of Change 831, or Community Before Cops on Instagram.
And that's John Doe 13K. for video.
Yes. DOE13K.
All right.
No space.
Well, thank you, Wes, and we'll do it again.
Awesome. All right. Have fun.
You too.
I have no desire to stay where lies destroy and fears dismay, where money talks and fortune frowns. Come help me find some higher ground. Lift me up, let me stand upon some decent, honest land. Sweeter soil than I have found. Oh, plant my feet on higher ground. The way we live will take its toll in broken lives and tortured souls. Open our hearts, turn us around, and guide our feet to higher ground. Lift me up, let me stand upon some decent, honest land. Sweeter soil than I have found. Oh, plant my feet on higher ground. Sleep, work, and worry, eat, drink, and shop. The crazy treadmill never stops. We're jumping off that merry-go-round, making our way to higher ground. This weary world has had its fill of words of war.
That was Higher Ground from the album of the same name, Charlie King and Karen Brandow. It's occasional assistance from Tex LaMontagne, but I don't think it was assistance on that particular number. We'll be hearing more from them. Don't go away. So today is May 26th. It's 27th, actually. It's boy, Wednesday, aren't we? 26th, and I'm here in San Lorenzo Park, and it's nearby, and it's about 25 to 3, talking with
Kelly
and Mario. And hi. So you're here. You got some concerns.
Yeah. So we were just. My husband came and parked up here at the top of the park. You know, we live down in the benchlands, and I was getting some clothes out of the trunk, and this older gentleman that lives across the street in the apartments is always looking out of his window with binoculars down at the park.
Now, which one is that here?
Right there. Right there behind the light post on the top floor.
Is he watching us now?
No, but he was there a second ago. He starts yelling, "John, why don't you go sell your drugs somewhere else, you whore? You know, call me a prostitute."
And this is the area right across from Dakota Street where the entrance to the San Lorenzo Park is. There's a whole series of apartments right across the way.
Never have we done anything like that.
Being nearsighted, I guess.
Yeah, right. And so, you know, we're telling him, you know, can he just mind his own business? You know, we're just parking here. We're not causing any problems. And he's yelling all kinds of profanities down at us. And he called the cops and told the cops that...
Do you brandish a knife at all?
No, sir. No, I do not, sir. I have multiple different witnesses here that have stated that. And plus, you know, I did. He's on the third floor. I mean, where am I going to throw my fucking pencil at him? You mean?
Yeah, so the cops came, and there was like five or six cop cars came, and they treated
him. When was this?
About a half hour ago. Huh. About a half hour ago. They came, they made him get down on the ground, and treated him like a complete criminal.
I'm on probation or parole. They had a cop dog walk around my car four or five times. They wanted to search my car, which I have no problem with. I don't have anything to hide, you mean? But it's like I was treated like a criminal for no reason at all, you mean? And I feel highly disrespected by that. This guy calls the cops multiple times a day on multiple different people. Obviously, he's untruthful, you mean? And he's exaggerating the truth to try and get people out of here. He is now calling cops on me and getting people treated like criminals for no reason at all, you mean?
In fact, cops had told us that they get multiple calls a day from this guy and several other people in the apartments across the street, which, and I understand some of them are probably a little irritated because some other people that live down here aren't the cleanest and not the nicest people. But
you look pretty clean to me.
I try to stay that way. You know, pick up the trash around here, try to make sure that our cars aren't, you know, dirty and, you know, but it's getting ridiculous.
Now, did you catch the names of any of these cops?
One of them is a sergeant that's on duty right now, and he was pretty respectful, actually, but the one that had the canine dog was really disrespectful to me and told me that he knows how to do his job, and it was just way disrespectful to me. I mean, but the rest of them, for the most part, were all right. They were doing their jobs. I mean, I see they got called here for somebody brandishing a weapon at somebody, which it's never occurred, and it was a false accusation.
And then as soon as they left, he's right back at the window yelling things out at us, telling him he's going to pop a cap in his ass.
Pop a cap in my ass.
You know, we laugh about it, but, you know.
Has this happened to you before with either this person or anybody else here?
Me personally, no, it's not happened to me, but after this incident has happened, multiple different people have come up to me and told me that this individual calls him.
Happened to our friend, our anonymous friend over here.
Calls him.
And how long have you two been on the bench lines?
Oh, my God. We were here, actually, at the very first Tent City a couple years ago.
And have you been here continuously or generally with breaks?
With breaks, but to other locations here in Santa Cruz.
And the last time you were here in the bench lines began when?
We were living in a hotel for 9 months with the whole COVID-19 thing because my husband was sick. But we got kicked out of the hotel because we went to a funeral in Vegas. So we weren't supposed to leave more than 24 hours. And so we've been here now. How long has it been?
We've been here
2 months.
We were up top, and then as soon as the bench stands opened, we went down there. They gave us a spot, and we've been down there ever since it opened. So.
Have you been vaccinated, and is that something you want or not?
I don't know. I'm hearing different stories about it, and I'm trying to look into it because I want to make best decisions possible, and I don't want to put myself in harm's way either one way or the other. If it's bad for you, I don't want to take it, and if it's good for you, I do want to take it. But I've been hearing mixed stories about it, so I'd like to give it a little bit more. I'd like to look into it a little bit more before I make any.
And I had COVID-19.
Well, you both say you have, right?
I had it, and they just assumed automatically he had it, and we both went into quarantine on our own.
How seriously were you ill?
For 3 weeks, I was in bed. I mean, it was like a really bad cold, but that was the worst. I mean, I couldn't taste anything for a solid month, but that was about it.
And this was how long ago?
About 3.5-4 months ago.
Anybody else you know of get it?
Quite a few friends actually have had it.
Mostly in the benchlands, or?
Not in the benchlands, no, but just people around town and family out of town.
Mostly, one people were the ones that mostly complained about.
Now, before you were in the benchlands, after you, which hotel were you in?
We were staying at the Comfort Inn in Watsonville.
Were you able to visit there again, or were you banned from there?
Well, we weren't.
But they don't allow visitors in general.
Yeah, the whole hotel has been changed to where it's for people that they've, you know, the homeless people that they've given the rooms to. And you're not allowed to have visitors while you're there anyway, so we can't go back and visit. But if...
On good terms, the manager gave me his phone number, and he wants to go bike riding with me and stuff like that. You mean? And he said that he was really actually apologetic. This had to happen, but he was out of his hands at this point. You mean? Because his supervisor got involved. You mean?
Yeah, you're not allowed to leave the place. You have to stay there. You can't be gone more than 24 hours at a time. And we were gone for a few days. We had to drive to Vegas for a funeral in the family.
But it wasn't your funeral.
No, thank God.
Now, before you were in the Benchlands, between hotel time and Benchlands, where were you?
Before the hotel, we were Koganets.
Oh, you moved directly from the hotel to the Benchlands.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, before it was Benchlands, we were staying down there before they made the new camp, which was just a couple weeks ago, actually. They opened it up. We were still down. We moved right back down here to the park.
How was the Benchlands both before and after the new camp?
So we were here for the first tent city down in Benchlands, which was an absolute wreck. It was not okay. But the
what was wrong with that?
The other people, other homeless people, the way they treated the park and the trash and just, you know, just
was the city picking up trash, or was that? I mean, was it all the fault of the people who were?
Honestly, no. It wasn't just all of our fault. We would bag the trash and have it ready, but they wouldn't come pick it up, and it would just get piled up and piled up, just like it even is now sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
But for the most part, I mean, they try to do their job, and we try to do our job. I mean, but you're gonna have those bad apples everywhere you go on their side and our side. You mean that don't follow procedure, or maybe the county workers feel like they don't have to do it because we're less than them or something like that, and maybe our people feel like they don't want to clean up for the county workers because they're not helping us out and picking up the trash when they should be. You mean? And it's like an ongoing conflict, I guess. But basically, for the most part, we're like, I don't want to live dirty. You mean? I don't know anybody that wants to live dirty. You mean? For the most part, but there are always those people that I don't conform to order and rule. You mean?
So, and what about the current Benchlands situation? What do you think of
it? I'm actually pretty happy with it so far this time. It seems to be that the group of people that we have down there work together and want to keep it clean and a little bit more order to it, you know, working together and keep things safe.
What kind of police patrolling, positive or negative, or parks and rec patrolling do you have?
So they drive.
I never seen a parks and rec guy on here before.
I know, I haven't seen a parks and rec guy in a long time. But the cops, they drive through on the levee about once or twice, at least once or twice a day. They will drive by.
Well, we drive through and they make the presence known. You mean they like hang out by the bridge? Oh, sorry about that. And hang out by the bridge a lot of times. You know, and they like really make the presence known.
Yeah,
you mean,
the fire, police, fire chief or whatever, yeah. They've been coming down a lot and just hanging around, you know, just letting
them look at people's tents, you mean? So I think that's like pretty much an excuse for them to come look inside their tent, you mean?
Yeah.
How are your neighbors in the campground?
Yeah, put ourselves next to people we know and we respect and are clean and hygienic as well as we are, you mean?
So. Do you know your neighbors? Do you see
each other?
Very well, yeah.
Do you have any problem with theft down there?
No, sure, not at all. Well, actually, there was a little...
There's some personal drama that goes on amongst people down there, but no real theft, no. Nothing that's stolen that hasn't been able to get back.
For the most part, people respect other people's property because nobody wants to get their stuff stolen, you mean? And don't get me wrong, like, I can't even replace the drug addicts that live around here and stuff like that, and they steal things, but for the most part, they don't steal from each other, you mean? Yeah.
Now, what are the big needs in the Benchland that you would ask for if you could?
A shower and more hygienic stations and stuff like that, to brush your teeth and wash your face with cleaner water, you mean? And maybe cleaner restrooms. I mean, I'm not sure if you've seen the restrooms lately. It's like so hideous, dude. You don't even want to come with
us with cleaning supplies. There's a few of us down there that would actually clean the bathrooms and the sinks just so that we could use them cleaner, honestly.
Are we talking about the bathrooms? We're talking about the porta potties.
Porta potties.
Yeah, bathrooms are closed, I believe.
I heard they were locked and closed. I haven't been there.
Yeah,
but the sinks that they bring you along with the porta potties, they are so filthy that you don't even want to touch it to wash your hands, you know?
Soap or toilet paper, so that
yes, there's
sense.
Never any soap.
Yes,
never soap. We have to put our own.
So the porta potties are inadequate as far as the washing goes.
Absolutely.
You seriously drive to San Jose to use the bathroom if you had to, you mean? is that horrible. I went to go step inside one, there's dirty shit filled pants on the floor, dude, and like I put one foot in there, I'm like, no, it's not gonna happen. It was like so horrible. There's no toilet paper in there. I guess we are people, dude. They had no common respect for the bathroom, you mean? Dude? Yeah, that's true. Pretty sad, dude, because that's our property and we should be taking care of that. So that, no, I blame on our people. You mean?
Yeah, that is our fault.
Now, the injunction protecting the San Lorenzo Park folks, which I guess was you, before they moved you down to the benchlands, or up from the benchlands into the park and back down to the benchlands. I don't know which way you moved.
Same way. Exactly.
It's like a shuffle sound every once in a while.
Shuffle, shuffle, shuffle. Whack-a-mole, schmack-a-mole.
Yeah, they don't
want to
get
to see
what
On June 29th, you probably know there's a hearing in court to determine the status of this injunction. Has the city given you any indication of what they're going to do?
I've heard a lot is that there's going to be some new ordinance where, once again, we're going to have it to where we need to take our things down at, like, I don't know, 8 or 10 o'clock at night, and then...
Right, that's the SCCO ordinance coming up on, I think it's June 8th or June 6th or something like that.
Yeah.
But this is actually, you guys in the park are presumably protected until June 29th, or until the time Anthony Prince, who's the counsel for the Santa Cruz Homeless Union, does a settlement with them.
So, I don't understand how that makes sense at all. Any of the one of us that wants to change our lives and do anything productive with our life, that does not work. That does not help us with progressing at all. There's no way we can keep ourselves clean and fed and look for work or even have a job and then be able to have time. Because when you to set our stuff up at night, it takes at least an hour, hour and a half. So if you can't put your stuff down until 10 o'clock at night, then you're not getting to bed till maybe 12 or 1. Then you got to be up and packed up again by 7 o'clock in the morning.
People out there trying to better their lives, you mean?
There's no solution in that whatsoever.
We've been talking with
Kelly
and Mario.
And do either of you have a telephone, or can you be reached by phone?
Yeah, sure.
We'll do it off mic. Anything you want to add that we haven't talked about, you think we should talk about?
I doubt that I could think of yet.
If you have any questions, more than willing to answer them through to the best of our ability.
Phone charging is still working down there?
Phone charging is going okay. It's going okay. They're still providing power for us to charge down
during
there.
During the daytime.
Yeah, during the daytime. But if people get off work at 5 or 6, you mean it doesn't really help them out none because you can't charge after 8, you mean? And things might be all filled, so they should have an after hours for people at work, you mean? And maybe they should provide maybe like lunches.
And again, that was our fault, too, because other people down in the camp were taking extension cords and plugging it in at nighttime, so that's why they cut it off, though.
When did they change that?
A couple of weeks ago. Or no, like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we fully accept blame for anything that we've done wrong, and we would like to work to fix that and get our status back, because not all of us are negative individuals, There may be a few of us, maybe a small group of us that don't like to conform to rule, And I understand that, they want to be... They're on the left against the government or whatever, that's fine, but if they're not harassing us, why make their job harder, That's the way I feel about it.
I've noticed, and of course I was told there was going to be a second campground, the Harvey West folks moved into the fenced area. Have you had any contact with them?
I have friends that were over there, but they weren't, I don't think they even, they're slowly starting to come over. Yeah.
I've seen there were about 20 tents there yesterday.
Yeah.
And I'm told that 20 or 30 people have moved into that fenced area. Are you allowed free access to that, or is it blocked off? Or?
I think they had put up a fence between us and them?
Where?
Between us and over here?
No, I don't think they did.
If you look from the footbridge, you'll see... A large space, and then a tented area. Fenced area.
But it's because people were driving their cars down here is why I think they fenced it off.
Yeah, that's why they put up the fence, because freaking people were trying to park their cars down in the bench lines next to their tent.
Because they should have some kind of thing up here, because people are getting tickets left and right to park up here. And they should have some kind of parking permits like that if you live in these apartment complexes.
We'd be more than happy to pay for them.
Yeah, if people are getting tickets, and these people are not getting tickets, we live here, right? And they're there and they're getting parking permits. Why can't we have parking permits?
You're the wrong sort of person.
I tell you, my hair is not right. It's going forward, that's why.
And again,
We've been talking with
Mario
and Kelly.
Hey guys, Robert here. Your thought is?
Stay positive.
Thank you. Any thoughts?
We're all human.
It's just some of us have more money than others.
Right.
Take care, guys.
And there were several people listening to the conversation I had with Mario and Kelly who didn't want to talk except for those final two statements, one made by one of them, the other made by the second person. Let's take a musical break and we'll get back to the Benchlands.
Oh, Mrs. McGrath, the recruiter said, would you like to make a soldier out of your son, Ted?
With a sign-up bonus and some college dough, now, Mrs. McGrath, would you let him go? Would you two sign here, send him over there? Two sign, two sign, two sign here. Would you two sign here, send him over there? One went over and one stayed here.
So Mrs. McGrath stayed by the phone for the 17 months that her son was gone.
Then a stop-loss order said he couldn't come back till he'd served another 6 months in Iraq.
Would you two sign here, send him over there? Two sign, two sign, two sign here. Would you two sign here, send him over there? One went over and one stayed here. It was 3 more months and Ted was freed, but instead of home, he went to Walter Reed.
When his mother arrived, she was heard to say, I'm here for my son, get out of my way.
Would you two sign here, send him over there? Two sign, two sign, two sign here. Would you two sign here, send him over there? One went over and one stayed here. Then in rolls Ted without any legs, and in their place he has 2 metal tags.
She kissed him 12 times or 2. Sweet Jesus, say that it isn't true.
Would you two sign here, send him over there? Two sign, two sign, two sign here. Would you two sign here, send him over there? One went over and one stayed here. I wasn't drunk and I wasn't blind when I left my 2 fine legs behind. But a roadside bomb on the 5th of May tore my 2 fine legs from the knees away.
Oh, Teddy McGrath, his mother cried, your fine young body was your mother's pride. I love the legs you was marching on, more than all the money in the Pentagon.
Would you two sign here, send him over there? Two sign, two sign, two sign here. Would you two sign here, send him over there? One went over and one stayed here. This foreign war, I do proclaim, was between George Bush and Saddam Hussein.
As God's in his heaven, I rue the day I let those butchers take my child away.
Would you two sign here, send him over there? Two sign, two sign, two sign here. Would you two sign here, send him over there?
One went over
and one stayed here.
And that was another one from Higher Ground. It was called Mrs. McGrath Revisited. Back to the Benchlands.
Yeah, yeah, I think when people try to get a good experience from substances and they for... It's kind of complicated because when you forget about some more important things that are more important, and then you realize later that it's really more important than taking a substance that you thought will make you feel better, it'll be a long road back to get that. Like depending on how long you just indulge.
Is this something you struggle with yourself?
Oh yeah, it's more personal. You know, I've had some close calls recently with death, and I'm still, so I got to cut down on smoking. I might think about changing to
We're talking smoking tobacco or smoking heroin?
Smoking fucking almost anything. I like heroin. I'll be honest. I tried fentanyl the other day, and I like it. But I don't always get, you know, it's the thing about money, too. I don't always get money, so I don't.
What's the name of this pooch you got here?
That's Cutie Boy. He goes by a lot of names. Benito is the mainstay.
And you're a resident here? You've lived here for a while?
Just about 3 years, me and Benito.
How's the bench land, in the bench land?
Recently, I stayed only maybe like less than a month. And then things got weird and personal. Like, people were trying to involve themselves in my life or whatever, like, they heard us talking about. And I kind of understood that it was from a higher power. it's just about time. I'm trying to stay more serious about some stuff that I've been ignoring.
Are you still outside?
Yeah, I'm still outside. It sucks. And I'm in a lot of pain from having to carry bags around all the time.
So you got a couple bags with you.
Yeah. I actually have 2 bags only, so it's a little easier. I hate getting shopping carts. Oh, wow, that's not helping. I just found this. I'm a avid bookworm. Sci-fi. Science fiction tends to be my favorite, like space travel or...
Favorite author?
I have a couple. Carlos Castaneda is always kind of my go-to from along. I read him since I was young, and it got from there went into like dreaming and metaphysical stuff. But
where do you think you'll be sleeping tonight? What kind of places are we being?
I have no idea. It's pretty much I actually just keep taking little breaks as I, you know, walk little by little here, there, whatever direction the food is at.
And last night?
I have to jog my memory, if I can even remember. We were at 41st Avenue yesterday. I had a reaction to smoking meth, and I had to call 911. Luckily, there was someone there, call 911. So, yeah, my throat's not doing good because of that, so I might have to change my outlook on
how large is your group of supporters that you're with?
It's pretty much, I would say it could be everybody, depending on how I, what I bring to the table.
And how many people would you say, were you in a group last night or were you alone?
Alone. I don't like being alone. No, it's not good. Yeah, well, I mean, I have Raymond. He was kind of across the street. Raymond and Scott 1 and 2. It's kind of all right to have that support group, but I imagine they're not, I'm not in the best of moods right now, but I'd like to be more social so that I could just, like, kind of go up to... I burned a lot of bridges from being on drugs and freaking out.
I noticed you were expressing that when we first started talking.
I didn't do it on purpose, but, like, when you see somebody having a mental episode, it's hard to know what to do, and if you can do anything, sometimes there isn't anything you can do. It takes a lot, it's a gradual thing. Like I said, depending how deep the person is and the problem.
Sounds heavy.
Yeah, really heavy.
And if you want to say, we've been talking with
Richard, no middle name, Portillo.
Thank you, Richard.
Yeah,
I'm Robert.
You're welcome.
Okay, I'll give you a card in case you want to get in touch. You have a phone you can be reached at?
No, I had a phone, but I gave it away to a buddy that I mentioned completed filling out my income tax, so I hope I get my third stimulus. I don't know if they qualified me or not.
Well, good luck, Richard.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Hey, thank you for the interview.
All right, you're welcome.
And in case you're wondering what that whoosh was in the background, it was the duck pond in San Lorenzo Park where I was chatting with
with Richard, or possibly the river, although the river is pretty low. So anyway, it was one of those two waterways. I then descended into the benchlands and had more conversations.
On the benchlands, the actual benchlands now. I was in the park talking to Richard. And it's and the sun is like 10 degrees warmer down here. It should be hotter, I imagine, as the summer deepens. I'm near the footbridge. And there is a fencing off the what I saw yesterday with the 2010s. It looks like the fence has moved closer to the footbridge, but it could have been the illusion from watching the footbridge.
And what I'm talking about here is the area looking, as you stand on the footbridge toward Soquel Avenue, where there is this much smaller campground, which is, of course, the former Agreement Camp. Now it's the Compelled to the Benchlands, whether we agree or not. Well, I guess you can go wherever you want, but you can't stay together as a community unless you come to the Benchlands campground. And it's just being separated from the other campground by this fence, which is it's a quite a sturdy metal fence as distinguished from, let's say, the orange, I think it's orange, webbing that is along the border of the other longer camp. That's one very distinctive feature that I mentioned of the other longer camp as you look in the opposite direction from this footbridge over between River Street and San Lorenzo Park toward Water Street. You see, gosh, I don't know, it looks like, I counted, I think, and you'll hear me say, about 100 tents. But again, some of them are very large tents rather than just small tents, so who knows how many people were involved there. And there was no fencing to speak of that fenced out the public. This metal fence fences out the public from the other campground, which I guess is open at the other end, I was told, along the road if you come in from the Soquel Avenue side or the area, Dakota Street, nearest Soquel Avenue, perhaps. I haven't tried to enter that camp yet. Kind of want to be invited in before I do. But we'll see what happens down there. Last time I visited the Harvey West camp, there wasn't a terribly friendly reception. It wasn't a hostile reception either, but people were minding their own business. That was up at Harvey West before they were compelled to leave by Susie O'Hara and the park ranger who directed them all in the nicest way out of the area. I guess the fence may have been an idea by the campers themselves to separate themselves from the what I guess Brent Adams calls the Wild West camp. That is, you know, lacks the firm guidance of his community agreement guidelines, which I think are not that bad. On the other hand, I think he overstates their need, and he overstates the impropriety of other people's approaches to this, whether it's Steve Plaich and Phil Posner's perhaps overly managed camp, or activists Alicia Cole's and the Homeless Union's autonomous run camp. He's pretty much intent and determined to have his way on these issues, or at least to see that his way is the only way others will be criticized. That's his right to have that opinion. Anyway, here's more of both my reflections and the conversations that eventually resulted.
And I'm walking around and checking things out. We're talking with, if you want to say,
Mark Seiler.
Yeah. Mark, you say you moved from the area near the Sharps containers and the electrical outlets at the center of the benchlands?
There was a fire. There were a couple of fires over there, on the other side there.
On the other side of the footbridge.
Yeah, so I think they wanted everybody to move here, and then have like no propane. So that's what I heard. I got a ticket over there about probable cause structural fire, and it was like $30,000.
I remember you mentioned that before, Mark.
Yeah, but I was over there, and somebody was. I finished my tent, and I got all ready. You know, I went to relax, and some guy was waving at me. You know, it's driving me crazy. You know?
Well, by over there, do you mean beyond the fence on in that new camp over there, or
under the bridge over there by the good times? I was there before they put the bridge over there. I don't know who put the bridge, you know, but, you know, I was making little patty cake things, you know.
A little unclear what Mark was talking about, but I'd spoken to him before, and you may have caught the earlier interview I had with him. He was previously camped near the electrical charging station, which is located in the middle, phone charging, I should say. They don't want it to be charged for anything but phones, which is kind of halfway between the footbridge and Water Street.
Grass for fun. I had a bunch of mice in Watsonville staying at the Stag Hotel. So,
now, how long ago was this fire here?
Oh, this fire, I think like well, there's a mattress over there. There's nothing left on it. It's grimy and it's got. I sat next to it and there's some. And it drove me crazy. There's some. I found some drywall over there by the other sharp container over there. So,
how long ago did the fire happen?
I don't know.
So what is this thing you're working on? It looks like a cross between a. It's got a big wheel and it's got a some mesh around it.
Well, it's up north. I was checking out the agriculture because I'm a welder. You know, they said take a horticulture class. So I went to the homeless garden project and it's a chick doing honey, like squeezing honey out of wax foam. I thought, well, that's neat, you know. So I only did it. I was staying at the Armory or something, and I was in a program, the El Dorado program, and so I got out of there, you know. And I was planning on going back, but they're going to pay $20 an hour, and then they changed the whole thing, and they weren't going to pay at all. So,
where is your tent here in the benchland?
I got that Kelty. I think the guy that the Osprey guy said I should go camp by Holy Cross, but he gave me a number, Suite 201. At the Stash Mill, the guy repairs tents, you know. So I had another one. I was going through the Goodwill, and they're exchanging them or something like that.
So you're still in the same place you were at before, near the electrical and the sharps container.
Yeah, but it's really hard.
It's too loud for you, you were saying.
Well, there's always like something, like a truck or something nearby that's got a vacuum, and then it's... And so, you know, like I know, like with contractors, you got to have like the HVAC, the plumbing, and electrical. And in order to get the modulus right, you know. So I don't know. Anything goes wrong. But I had the tent, it was perfect, and I looked down, and there was a hole in the bottom of the tent. So I was like, dang, you know.
Well, I'm going to leave it there, Mark. Anything you want to finish up with?
Well, it's hard to stay perfect all the time. You know, I just got to believe it, you know.
I could never do that.
You got to learn, I guess. Yeah.
Take care of yourself.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you had trouble following all that, so did I, but I played it anyway. Let's take a musical break.
A. Philip Randolph, born in 1889, just 23 years after Congress finally freed the slaves, he organized the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters back when organizing unions was a fast track to the grave. Old man Pullman tried to bribe him with a blank check and a letter, said it's good to seven figures soon as you and I agree. Randolph sent the check back with a note that stated simply, you could buy my parents, but you can't buy me. Make the laws and pick the president, but the last word in the argument is you can't buy me. Natalia Dimitrik of Ukrainia State TV was a signer for the death upon the 6 o'clock news. When the anchorman said candidate Yushchenko is the loser, he assumed she would report that, but she silently refused. The result
truth will set us free. She sparked a general walkout of journalists by saying, you may own the media, but you don't own me. You don't own me. No, you don't own me. You may own the government, make the laws and pick the president, but the last word in the argument is you don't own me. One person at the bottom stands in solitary witness, like Rosa Parks, believe in segregation could be stopped. The underdogs who fought him know the emperor is witless. When the system comes apart, it will unravel from the top. I don't even know her name, an old woman on the corner, downtown Kansas City, on the first day of the war. Her sign must have been 4 feet tall, stating her position. And though passing drivers cursed her, her words could not be ignored. God bless the people of Iraq. The message she had written made me think of them as family, not some faceless enemy. Having no illusion she could ever stop the slaughter, said, I may not change the system, but it won't change me. It won't change me. No, it won't change me. It may own the government, make the laws and pick the president, but the last word in the argument is it won't change me. Cause you can't buy me. No, you can't buy me. The last word in the argument, you can't buy me.
And that was You Can't Buy Me by Charlie King. I'm going to read you the lyrics because I think they're good lyrics and they deserve to be repeated even if you caught most of them. A. Philip Randolph, born in 1889, just 23 years after Congress finally freed the slaves, he organized the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, back when organizing unions was a fast track to the grave. Old man Pullman tried to bribe him with a blank check and a letter, said it's good to seven figures, soon as you and I agree. Randolph sent the check back with a note that simply stated, you could buy my parents, but you can't buy me. You can't buy me. No, you can't buy me. You may own the government, make the laws, and pick the president. But in the last word in the argument is, you can't buy me. Natya Dimitruk of Ukraina was a signer for the deaf upon the 6 o'clock news. When the anchorman said candidate Yushchenko was the loser, he assumed she would report that, but she silently refused. The results are rigged, she signed. Instead, please do not believe them. I will not interpret lies. Perhaps the truth will set us free. She sparked a general walkout of journalists by saying, you may own the media, but you don't own me. You don't own me, no, you don't own me, no, you don't own me. You may own the government, make the laws, and pick the president, but the last word in the argument is, you don't own me. One person at the bottom stands in solitary witness, like Rosa Parks, believing segregation could be stopped. The underdogs who fought him know the emperor is witless. When the system comes apart, it will unravel from the top. I don't even know her name. An old woman on the corner, downtown Kansas City, on the first day of the war. Her sign must have been 4 feet tall, stating her position, and though passing drivers cursed her, her words could not be ignored. God bless the people of Iraq, the message she had written, made me think of them as family, not some faceless enemy. And having no illusions she could ever stop the slaughter, said, I may not change this system, but it won't change me. It won't change me, no, it won't change me. It may own the government, make the laws, and pick the president.
But the last word in the argument is, it won't change me. Because you can buy me, you can't buy me. No, you can't buy me. The last word in the argument is, you can't buy me. And that's, again, a song by Charlie Phillips, You Can't Buy Me, about A. Philip Randolph and some other folks as well on the album Higher Ground. But now it's back to Lower Ground in the Benchlands.
Take care of yourself.
Okay.
How are things, I should say?
Things out here are fine as far as I know. We're good as far as the city letting this go on and whatnot, letting the camp be here.
How are things among your own neighbors here?
Sometimes can be like a little chaotic, but as far as just in general, like, we haven't had any like specific really personal problems with like a lot of the neighbors or anything. Like maybe one or two, but I think that's in any community.
And what would you ask for if you could get better resources down here?
Showers more often and whatnot. Like right now they're just once a week on Wednesdays. And definitely showers more often, because you miss a day. It's like you miss a day that you're here. That's like 2 weeks without shower.
How long have you been down here?
I'd say maybe a month and a half, 2 months. Maybe about a month and a half, 2 months. As far as being homeless in general out here, I'd say since October.
Uh-huh. And is it better here in the Benchlands than it was in the Upper Park, or different, worse? What do you think?
It's hard for me personally to say. They would be able to say more. They were there for longer. Hey, Shago.
I'm coming.
But.
Want to take a few of these to give out?
Yeah, sure.
Got some more, I'm sure.
But I'd say, I mean, since I've been down here, it's been fairly calm. Mm-hmm. He's doing a radio thing.
No, I know. I remember.
Do you have a little
when we were up there, I was I doing a little recording bit with you and everything.
You got a better memory than that. Hey, thank you. I'm good. Thank you, though.
Here, Bubba. Oh, no.
So you remember we spoke before. You got a better memory than I do. And again, your name is?
Fernando Hutchison.
And Fernando, how is it down here compared to up there?
It's honestly a lot nicer because when it was up there, we were honestly crowded. We didn't have our own little spot. It wasn't organized enough. Now we have our own little sectioned areas for our tents. We're allowed certain leniency as long as, you know, we're not just making a mess, causing disruption, just wanting nothing but violence and aggravation. So it is a little better down here. Not much, but still a little better. My baby boy.
And who is this guy?
My baby boy, Shaggy Joker Jr. Hutchison.
Yeah.
Look, this is in 2018.
Chunky baby. Leave
some
alone.
Of these, some of these to give away to people?
Come here, baby.
Thank you.
Yeah. Baby buddy.
So, oh, God.
How old is this kiddo?
One. Well, actually, no, wait. He's two, isn't he?
Yeah, he's two.
I'm sorry. I'm so tired.
He's going to be three in November.
No, I know his birthday, but yeah, he's two and a half, basically.
I guess I know the feeling. So what's wanted down here that's missing?
You were
saying showers, but what about you?
Well, in my opinion, they tell us, like, no violence and everything, and no theft, but not everybody listens to that. So I'm like, if we could have our own little group that, you know, regulate things, and it's, you know, everybody voting on whoever, you know, would be in the group. Regulating everything, going up and down, you know, basically like a little somewhat guard set.
Like
it's just that we trust. You know, cops don't want to come in here. We don't want the fucking cops in here, so it's like a double-edged sword.
Are there regular meetings here that, you know, you can, you might arrange such a thing with?
Yeah, but it's just when it comes to, like, protecting our own valuables or our own family, it comes to the just ignore them and they'll go away.
Yeah, it's kind of just left up to us to
My bike's getting damaged. I'm worried about my two-year-old. I'm not worried when people argue outside and they're, you know, fighting amongst each other. But the fact that somebody will just randomly come into the camp at night when everybody else is, like, dead asleep, even everybody else smoking their own shit, and then our bikes are getting damaged, our shit's getting taken, and even if we put everything up. So it's like, I was saying, if we could have, like, our own little, you know, community-appointed guard set, where, you know, maybe they regulated up and down the path and, you know, got to either one, move motherfuckers out that are starting too much shit, or, you know, just shoo somebody away from somebody else's shit.
You're nodding.
I'm agreeing, because, like, for instance, like, last night, like, we've been doing our own laundry back there. We had someone put a bunch of bread into our laundry tote. We've had, just his bike got messed with last night, and I feel like just having, like, a setup where we have certain individuals that, like he said, have authority to, okay, if someone needs to be moved out of the park, they can enforce that. And have the backup of the people who are running this camp through the city for us as well.
Now that would be what, Jeremy and Chris?
Yes.
And what kind of help do they provide, if any?
They have been bringing, they've been asking people, hey, do you need this? Do you need this? Like garbage bags, water.
Didn't he
brought us a canopy.
A pop-up shower.
Yeah.
Diapers, wipes. They really ask us if we actually genuinely need something we could use or utilize.
Yeah.
And it's honestly awesome. But it's a protection part. Like, Jeremy and Chris, they will, like, you know, if we let them know something's not right or something, they will, you know, try to regulate it. But when they're not here 24/7 and we're having problems 24/7, if we're supposed to be our own little community, we have our own little community meetings.
Yeah.
Is there a community meeting regularly here?
Thursdays.
Yeah, but that's the reason I don't even go. I don't even consider it a community meeting.
Yeah, only so many people actually have been showing up.
It's not even that part. Like, okay, if I was to go and I was to suggest, how about we have like a little guard group set up? And if Jeremy's like, oh, well, you see, that would promote more violence. Okay, but at the same time,
he has also given us permission to essentially, how did he put it? He wants us to handle things as a community on our own,
okay,
more
well,
so.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 18 times you tell a motherfucker to leave, and then I have to grab my pellet gun. But then they're not even in the right mindset, so then it's not even appropriate.
Yeah.
So what is appropriate? Just ignoring everything and letting my entire area just go to hell? I'm trying to make it into, you know, not a living area, but somewhere I can stabilize myself for the moment. My son's not having to worry about running over needles, so, you know.
How is the needle disposal situation?
They could use it a little bit more, in my opinion, but it is getting a little better. Like, when we first got down over here, I raked up the whole spot over here. Found, like, some fucking real thick motherfuckers. And I've been trying to, you know, rake every now and then here and there just to, you know, find anything outside of the tent lining so that if my son runs out and at the moment I can't grab him, he's not about to step on a needle, you know.
How many people under the age of 12 would you say are in the campground?
Two, because Devin's 14. Yeah. She's about to be 15.
We're actually the only unit out here that actually has children.
And you don't get any flack from authorities for that, or you?
They actually, you know, did once come by because apparently when we were back up on the hill, they were trying to find us just to ask about the children's situation. Are they going to school? Do they have enough clothes? Are they eating well? And when they found us down here, they're just asking that exact same thing. They're going to school, right? And we're like, yeah. Either I'll bike them over to school, or you know, I'll bring them back and everything, or we'll take turns doing it. We regularly have some food. We pond together and put our food EBT together to make sure we have some food here and there. Whenever we need something, we try to, you know, maybe like, okay, I got like some inner tubes I don't need, so then I could trade those to somebody if I needed some food, for example.
There is, from what I've noticed, been like a bigger push of people coming around trying to push them to go into the Reverly shelter more.
Reverly Family Shelter?
Yes, but it's still a thing of, hey, it's up to y'all, but it's still kind of a push of, you need to do this, you need to do this. And I...
No, they keep pushing it.
Yeah. And I had that problem when I was actually staying over at the loft, because I have a 4-year-old that I have other family members taking care of now, and they kept pushing and pushing me to actually go take her from a situation where she had all of her needs met to taking her out here to push me into the Reverly house.
And what was your reaction to that?
I told them that the only way that I'm bringing my daughter out here is if I have housing in sight that I can move into. Otherwise, forget it.
How long were you in the Poly Loft?
It wasn't the Poly Loft, but it was the pallet shed.
That was the pallet shed. Describe that for me.
It's basically... It's made in the same fashion that a outdoor shed that you would put in the backyard is, just basically with windows and a light.
There's how many of them are there?
There are, I want to say, I think about maybe 30 or 40.
And you were there with your daughter?
No. I've refused to bring my daughter down. One, I don't want to have her out here when I'm reliant on a shelter.
By out here, you mean at that shed?
Yeah. Well, the shed are just, right now she's in the spot where she has all her needs met.
And these are the sheds that are next to the, at the Coral Street area?
Yes, it was in the Coral Street shelter.
And they kind of were cooked up around the time of the COVID?
Yes. There's no insulation in them, and there was also water getting inside of them. I know that there were one or two people that actually had to be taken to the hospital over hypothermia.
Over a period of?
I'd say the first one, I want to say, happened before December, and then the second one was around the, I want to say, February. Or so. Uh-huh.
And so, are you still feeling a similar pressure here that you felt in the sheds and in the loft? Or?
No, not as far as my daughter goes. I've been asked maybe once while I've been out here about it, and whereas when I was over there, it was twice a week, just about every week. About why I wasn't bringing my daughter down. You're not meeting our requirements of them saying that I wasn't meeting the requirements of moving forward. And my whole thing was just like, my daughter has all of her needs met. Why would I take her out of a situation then where then she doesn't?
So if, as may be happening on June 29th, the court lifts the injunction that protects this campground and says city can do what it wants because the COVID's over, the governor's lifted his stuff, there's no more yellow, green, right, orange, and purple tiers and all that sort of thing. And the city then says, well, you guys are going to have to move in 72 hours, or you guys are going to have to move. We don't know where, but good luck. And it's been fun having you here, but we got to rent this area out to the Taco Festival, let's say, which they've done on different years. And presumably they wouldn't be so stupid as to do that again this year. But nobody ever gained any money by exaggerating the intelligence of the city council or overestimating it. So what would be your personal response? Any idea? Or would you make it up as it came?
I personally, I would probably try to go out on, in that case, probably go out in the public land and just build a shelter out there. I mean, and use, like, the tactic, like, you know, we've got our own laundry going. We know how to generate electricity on our own and whatnot without a formal generator, that kind of thing, and just attempt to live off the grid somewhere.
How many people would you think you'd be living with if you did that?
I know for a fact that the four that are in there, and then the three that are in this tent, and then me and my boyfriend, we'd be all going as a group.
So you would have a certain cohesiveness, and you'd have enough people to kind of mutually support each other.
Yes, which is what we have now.
And did you have that before you were here in the Benchlands?
Before then, it was just me and my boyfriend, and he got kicked out of the shelter for asking a security guard over there to not grab him, and because he didn't feel safe around the security guard. And at that point, because I already did not feel safe living there because of the same security guards and other...
Name of the security guard?
I don't remember offhand. He knows more so than I do. But I, from that point, I would be at the shelter during the day, and I would be with him at night because I just didn't feel safe at night. So there was me staying in my car, which is no longer functional. And then at a certain point, when I had all my stuff out of the shelter that I was keeping during the day, we came out up here. And then
when was that?
This was right before they moved everyone down here.
So probably March or April.
I want to say like late April. And we were here for about maybe 2 weeks, just me and him on by ourselves without kind of a community set up. And then at the end of those 2 weeks, we got invited into their family, and they've taken us in since.
Has that been happening much with other tents and groups of people that you're aware of?
As far as I'm visually aware of, yes. But as far as socially, like talking to people, I couldn't really say for certain. But I've noticed people clustering together like that, though. I've noticed a lot of that happening.
And let's take a musical break. And for our last musical number... We're going to have another song by, well, it's written by Andy Wilkinson, and I think it might have been sung by Charlie King, but it certainly was on his album, Higher Ground. The lyrics aren't that hard to hear, but some of them, you have kind of a quiet voice, so this is what they are. Johnny was Cherokee cowboy, long braids hanging from his hat. He wrangled up on the Littles ranch, and he rode with my Uncle Jack. He sat like a shadow in the saddle. He wrote poetry with his rope. He had a light hand for the horses and a smile for us little folk. Johnny and Jack come a-callin', took my brothers and sisters and I to the Hale County picnic, '07, the 4th of July. They had a big tent and a little brass band that boxed lunches on the lawn, and when they raised Old Glory to the top of the pole, they sang the freedom song. Oh, say, can you see, Johnny, why aren't you singing? Oh, say, can you see, Johnny, is there something wrong? Oh, say, can you see, Johnny, where are you going? Oh, Johnny, why don't you stay and help us sing the freedom song? The other men took their hats off. They hollered and they whooped it up. But Johnny just stood there, silent, with a hurt and an angry look. Then his face grew soft and he kneeled right down, and he sounded plumb worn out. When he said, little partner, it's not my freedom that they're singing about. Oh, say, can you see, Johnny, why aren't you singing? Oh, say, can you see, Johnny, is there something wrong? Oh, say, can you see, Johnny, where are you going?
Oh, Johnny, why don't you stay and help us sing the freedom song? He mounted his horse in a couple of strides, and I watched as he rode away across the plains of the land of the free till he vanished in the home of the brave. Since then, I've sung the freedom song 1,000 times or more, and every time I wonder just whose freedom it is that we're singing for. Oh, say, can you see, Johnny, why aren't you singing? Now let's hear the actual song.
Johnny was a Cherokee cowboy, long braids hanging from his hat. He wrangled up on the little S ranch, and he rode with my Uncle Jack. He sat like a shadow in the saddle. He wrote poetry with his rope. He had a light team for the horses and a smile for us little folk. Johnny and Jack come a-calling, took my brothers, my sisters, and I to the Hale County picnic on 7th of July. They had a big tent, band and box lunches on the lawn, and when they raised Old Glory to the top of the pole, we all sang the freedom song. Oh, say, can you see, Johnny, why aren't you singing? Oh, say, can you see, Johnny, is there something wrong? Oh, say, can you see, Johnny, where are you? Johnny, why don't you stay and help us sing the freedom song? The other men whipped their hats off. They hollered and they whooped it out. Johnny just stood there silent with a hurt and an angry look. Then the stage grew soft and he kneeled right down and he sounded tumble out when he said,
and that was the freedom song, Charlie King and Karen Brandow, again on Higher Ground. Now we get back to the Freedom Camp, or I should say the group that was the Freedom Camp until it moved to the Benchlands. And, well, you can get their own opinion as to where they're at now.
Anything you want to add to this discussion that you think we haven't covered that might be interesting for people to know about or useful for somebody who doesn't know what it's like to live outdoors or for people who do but want more information about the Benchland?
I would like to let people know that this is a situation that can happen to anyone. This is a situation that it's not just people who might have had addictions where their life crumbled around them. My first experience with this was in May of last year when I was in Reno. My house burnt down. I went from having a house, having everything set, having everything stable, to at 2 in the morning, having nowhere to live. With just me, my daughter, and my ex. And it doesn't... You could have all the stability in the world, and the moment that things come crashing down, you're no different than anybody else out here. And I just... I would like if people would take into consideration that it's not always... It's not a choice. It's not a thing of just...
Lifestyle.
Yeah, it's not just a, oh, well, this person chose drugs over this, or this person chose alcohol over this, or sometimes it's just a situation of life happened to me, and I need help getting up on my feet. And in a lot of cases, people don't always get that help. And even sometimes when you have shelters that are trying to help, for one reason or another, it just, you know, say if someone's disabled, they have a fire, and they don't make enough with Social Security or otherwise to be able to get back on their feet, then they're stuck out in a situation like this. That kind of situations. I had a grandmother that almost happened to. She had barely, she from Social Security was barely getting enough to just get by. And let's say if she lost an apartment or whatnot, unless she had family or external situations that would help her financially, she would be permanently stuck out on the streets.
And it happened to you?
Yes.
Must have come home. If you want, give me your number so I can call you to get kind of periodic reports. If you feel like it, I'll give you my card.
Okay. All right.
And again, we've been talking with
Kaylee Smith.
And we have a few more interviews from the Benchlands, but that's it for today. Back again on Sunday with more of likely, well, more of the same and perhaps a few different things as well. Gosh, I guess you can find us. If you can't tune in on Sunday, you can find us online at the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, under the latest and lost shows, where we try to archive pretty quickly after the shows are posted, sometimes even before they go out on the net. We sometimes have our net problems. So listen in if you'd like, and then if you want to call in with any comments or corrections, I'll be happy to pass them on. My number is 831-423-4833. At you next time.
Thinking up the air, confused, let him spot the real nightmare. Say, hi, I'm a diesel, got all the pirate radio, land of the free and home of the brave. CC calling your grave. The coast guards are coming to shut the pirate down. The double aim and free speech, the FCC's in town. Their axles and their hammers, they smash it all to bits. They want a little battle, but the war's not over yet. Say, I am a diesel, got all the pirate radio, land of the free and home of the brave. FCC's rolling your grave. Oh, what are they afraid of? That we might tell the truth. We might play something good, and it wouldn't be a ghost. What we need is liberty, not those sticky laws. Freedom from the FCC and their money-grubbing paws. Say, hi, I'm a diesel. Cut on the pirate radio. Land of the free and home of the brave. FCC calling your grave.
waving, defies the FCC. Lily-livered scallywags full of mendacity. It's 50 of the airways, we're selling lots of rum. We'll wake them, walk the plank, we're having lots of fun. Sing! I am H. Diesel, cut on the pirate radio, land of the free and home of the brave. FCC calling your brave. I am H. Diesel, cut on the pirate radio, land of the free and home of the brave. FCC calling your brave. I am H. Diesel, cut on the pirate radio, land.